life and more. We never grow old. End up as a machine, but we'll still be free.
Hello and welcome back to the show. We are still in T-Space.
We're still in T-Space. I'm pretty sure I saw a whale.
A whale?
A whale.
Was it a white whale? Was there a guy tied to it?
Yes.
So it was a white space whale?
It was.
Okay, is that why you have a peg leg?
Yes.
That must have been painful, I'm just saying.
It's okay.
All right, well, there is that.
You don't know what's in T-Space.
You don't know what's in T-Space.
I think it's like an ocean.
It is like an ocean. As I understand it, there's going to be some more information coming at some point about what's in T-Space.
Well, it's unknown. Well, yeah. I believe it's whales.
You believe that it's giant space whales?
Yeah, possibly squid.
Space squid?
Possibly.
Okay.
You know. Can't prove it, and
no,
I can't disprove it.
No, can't disprove it either, really.
Exactly.
It's that whole proving that it exists and proving that it doesn't exist
right.
type of thing, so... Well, we are of course back with some more Twilight Sector podcast.
Exactly.
Goodness. Yes, I'm sitting here with my wonderful co-host Jeremy, and I am Ethan, and we are joined once again by the masterminds, the maniacal villains that are behind this whole
thing. Are you villains?
I think we're at the wrong party.
Yeah, we write ourselves both ways.
Okay. Well, you know, a villain never considers himself a villain.
Exactly.
So
that's true.
There you go. But we are here with the Twilight Sector guys. Guys, who are you?
Chris Stevens, kind of editor at large.
And I'm Mike Cross, I guess what the creator.
We'll give you
something
that title.
Like that, yeah. And this whole thing developed out of my long-running RPG campaign, so mm-hmm. I guess that kind of qualifies, but you know, the players were co-creators.
It was a whole collective.
Chris was one.
It was a whole collective process, of course.
Exactly.
We're all just hanging out in T-Space and discussing what is to be.
Feeling the hum of the deck plates, all that good
exactly,
stuff.
Exactly, exactly. I think you can sense the future in T-Space. Mm-hmm. It's kind of...
It involves guns.
It does involve guns and possibly pets.
Pets. Pets as guns?
Possibly.
Or guns as pets?
A little bit of both.
That is kind of odd and awkward.
It's perfectly fine, though.
Excellent.
Everybody loves violence.
No pets were hurt in the filming of this episode.
They weren't? We're at the wrong party.
We are. I think we
You're
have...
You're seeing what one of those guys' weapons can do? Sorry.
Whoa.
Sweet. Now, I do think, though, one of the guns... We're going to be talking about though is something new that you guys are trying to push though, a Kickstarter I believe.
Yes, we are going to be relaunching a Kickstarter that we did. I think we talked about it in the last episode.
Mm-hmm.
It's for Six Guns Lasers. You learn a lot when you do something new, and Kickstarter was a brave new world for us.
Mm-hmm.
And fortunately, it didn't go as we had hoped. We had many grand, glorious ideas of things we were going to put in there, bells and whistles and everything.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, we just went a bridge too far. Mm-hmm. And this time, the idea is going to be that we're going to set the goal intentionally low. I think mm-hmm. we should, with the help of the wonderful folks who have supported us before,
mm-hmm.
hit that goal very easily. And then we'll start, you know,
stretch goals.
Stretch goals. We'll keep adding those bells and whistles back in and let the people who are supporting the project decide which ones they want.
Okay. Well, why don't you tell us real quick, though, start with the baseline here. With,
right.
Six gun lasers. What is it you guys are trying to accomplish with the Kickstarter? What is it you're trying to get out the door
Well, basically, the manuscript is intact. What mm-hmm. we need to do is just do the last little pieces. You know, manuscript is only the starting point for a RPG product. Next, we have to go, get a cover, we have to get art, mm-hmm. we have to do layout, we have to do editing, all those things.
Gotta fix all of Mike's mistakes.
Well, I didn't write this one. This is a Martin job, although you can fix my mistakes if I do any sidebars in it or whatever. But, yeah, so basically we need to do that and to get a little bit of money to do the print run of the mm-hmm. book and be ready to go and have it out on the shelves to folks in electronic format as well.
Excellent. And it's a... I mean, fans of RPGs probably know a little bit about it, but it's a bit more of an involved process, especially with the print product in there. I mean, even if you're talking a small print run, if you're you know any print run is going to have things associated with it.
Well, and for example, just to let the cat out of the bag, whatever the Kickstarter is going to be with a very modest $500 goal. We already have more than $500 into the product as we speak now. When we throw in the print run of the product, so basically we're just asking to get a little help from the folks, kind of help mm-hmm. defray the cost, push us over the top, and get us moving. We really need the RPGs community's help on this sort of thing. And I just had as I was going through this to figure out what we were going to say on the Kickstarter, I got a wild idea last night, and I got up out of bed, and I went down to the computer, and I looked. We currently have 17 manuscripts basically ready for development. Mm-hmm. The having the manuscripts only the first step, like we just talked about.
Sure.
So
you got to get the words first, obviously. Yeah.
Exactly. But we have 17 of these ready to go. We need the help of the community to. Mm-hmm. Bring the ball over the goal line, finish up.
It's not as easy as plugging it into Microsoft Word and hitting print.
No, it is. I wish it was.
Yeah.
InDesign is a joy of a program, but and if you don't do it yourself, then you have to hire somebody mm-hmm. to do it, and that can get pretty expensive. But for example, those 17 transcripts that our manuscripts that we have in hand are representing an investment by TerraSoul of over $9,000 already. But one way or another, we want to bring all those to the market and get them in people's hands because we know that there's plenty of folks out there that are excited about them. One of the big things...
They're all just lost in T-space right now.
Exactly, they are.
Trying to avoid the space.
We want them to make the transition back into normal space and into people's hands. One of the things we've always prided ourselves on is having free products out there for anybody, mm-hmm. for folks. And
you have quite a few, actually.
Right. I do. Yeah.
We have 26 products on the market at the moment. 11 of those are free. And I just, the other day...
Available all over. I mean, you can
exactly.
check that stuff out and get a taste for Twilight Sector.
Yeah, drive through exactly. RPG.
Yeah. But, and I know that the community likes our stuff because yeah. I did a... I went out and did the numbers the other day just for grins. Mm-hmm. And as of the 2nd of this month, which would be April the 2nd of 2013, we have 20,486 free books that we've given away. 20,486.
Mm-hmm. But I downloaded 19,999.
We're screwed. We just blew my whole thing out of the water. Never mind.
Oh man! All right, so you've managed to distribute over 20,000, and that's just the free books.
That's just the free books.
There's 11 free. That doesn't count all the other the print stuff and the other
exactly.
Electronic publications that you've done.
And so I didn't do the numbers on everything. One of those things you're sitting there late. I do this all the time. A thought comes into my head. I run down to the computer and I start mm-hmm. messing with
right.
it. And that was one of them. Another late night foray to the computer.
We all do that sometimes.
Well, and you can get these books either electronically or mm-hmm. the nice. See, I like the size, just the nice little.
Yeah. People familiar with Traveler know classically the original Traveler books were what is this?
This is called digest size.
Digest style books. Which this size book fit perfectly on like a Kindle,
right?
Yeah,
and we discovered that pretty easily,
or any of those.
Yeah, yeah. And obviously that isn't even getting into the tablet stuff,
right?
Because that's becoming tons of people are getting more tablets these days. That all aside, I mean, you guys are are also, you know, putting the pulp in people's hands.
You know? We try to. You know, that's one of our goals, and that's actually one of the things that we're hoping Kickstarter helps. We do have a lot of stuff that we want to get. You know, not everything that we in the entire line is in Dead Tree yet, but we'd like to get everything there. Mm-hmm. And you know, that's what we'd like the community to help us out with. And FYI, everything isn't in digest size. We have have monsters like Tinker, Spacer, Scion, Spy, which is about 190 page.
Yeah. And it's a gorgeous book.
Yes.
It's a gorgeous book, because since then I actually have seen Tinker, Tailor, Soldier, Spy, the movie anyway.
Awesome.
So, been on the, so you know, I saw that and immediately was like, Tinker, Tailor, Scion, Spy, just put Gary Oldman in there. And but yeah, you guys
came
have
out, it was weird. It came out in the same year within a couple of months of each other.
I know. And so you have the standard size books. Now, is this one going to be
is going to be a digest size.
Going to be another digest size.
It'll be about the same size. If folks have seen any of the Six Guns products so far, it's along the exact same
lines. So for those
of
us who are OCD and have the other Six Guns series,
they will
fit on the shelf.
Very nicely, yes.
And not look strange.
They will.
Because when they're off,
you know, the gamers are going to look at that and go,
you can't have them that way.
Your balance is off on the shelf there.
So yes. We do
base purchases on this sometimes.
When are you thinking of starting the Kickstarter?
As soon as we get this recorded.
Oh, well, there you go.
So we're holding you up.
Oh, there you go. Okay. There you go.
Welcome to the launch party.
So the prerequisite to the Kickstarter is a plus one on recording this episode and publication.
There you go.
Okay.
You
go. That's an incentive.
So we need all of the fans and just everyone out there. If you like space operas, if you like just science fiction, and we're talking, we're not talking soft science fiction, we're talking in-depth science fiction.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you can take pieces from it and use what you want. You need to go out there and check out the Kickstarter as soon as it pops up. Because any of these books are just great.
Yeah, well, and obviously these are great designed for Traveler and in the Twilight Sector universe. You can use them in any Traveler.
Yeah, and actually,
exactly, that's what they're designed for.
And what I like about it, and we're going to get into talking a bit here about one of them fairly soon.
Right.
Is say you're running any other game system. I mean, whether it's a superhero game or anything where you're going to have guns in it, you know.
Yep.
These are actually really cool for just some cool futuristic gun designs. I mean, some of these are very Blade Runner-esque and, you know, just perfect
to kind of explain what we're doing with Six Guns, the Kickstarter is for the third edition. And in this episode, we're going to talk about the first edition, right? Or is this the second? This one here.
What do you mean? Well, that Six Guns Gauze Weapons was the first issue. Then the second one was Six Guns Rescue Organizations.
So the six is the key factor. It'll be six of something.
Right.
Yeah. We may come up with one of six pets. But no. Which we will talk about futuristic pets later on in the episode. So the Kickstarter is the third edition.
I get the vision of the tick poodle gun.
No, exactly. It's when we originally conceived of this line, one of the discussions we had was, it was suggested six guns, but, you know, we said, well, we're not only going to do just weapons in this line, so what happens when we do rescue organizations? Like, I don't know, just call it Six Guns, because that's a heck of a lot more interesting than six things.
Right. So. Six stuff.
Yeah, six stuff. Doesn't have the same ring.
Yeah. Doesn't roll off the tongue. But the previous ones, I mean, obviously you've got, you're working on, the Kickstarter is going to be for Six Guns, the Six Gun Lasers. And so what are the previous ones that you guys have out that sort of give people the taste for what you guys have in store?
So we have Six Guns Gauze Weapons.
Gauze
Weapons.
Yeah, people pronounce it two different ways.
Gauze.
You say Gauze, I say Gauze.
You put Gauze on me, that means you hit me with something. I'm going to hit you
with
something.
If I hit you with one of those, you need some Gauze. A whole lot of Gauze to stop the bleeding.
Yes.
I see rescue organizations right here.
Right.
So.
Six Guns Rescue Organizations. It was fun.
It's not just firearms. I mean, that's the thing we really
as a matter of fact,
point out here.
One of the transcripts that we or manuscripts. Why do I keep saying transcripts? I don't know.
Because we're on radio.
That could be.
Yeah.
there you go. One of the manuscripts we do have.
It's T-space sickness.
Partially done would be for Six Guns number 4, and that one is slated to cover vac suits.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So, it's something that we think is indispensable in a science fiction setting that can be ported over to all kinds of different games.
Yeah.
In all kinds of different game systems. The beauty of Six Guns is it does provide you with all the traveler-specific, Mongoose traveler-specific information you need to run it. But much more than that is the descriptions of the item.
That's where you
really get your money's worth, in my opinion.
Exactly. We'll have company names to give you a flavor of the company. This company has been involved in making gauze weapons for centuries.
Yeah. Well, and these guys are fly by night, you know.
Right. Yeah. Adding to that richness and that integration feeling. Yeah. So I mean, you feel like there's a history.
Right.
It feels much more real.
Martin Doherty, our author for the Six Guns line, described it, I think, pretty well. Is the quote in there?
Generic versions of most of these items are presented in various game supplements, but there is a significant difference between aiming a generic, vanilla-flavored revolver at the opposition and pulling out a specific model chosen as much as what it says about you as for its capabilities.
Typical Martin there.
Mm-hmm.
I think that sums up what the whole Six Guns line is about.
Uh-huh.
We're the anti-generic.
Add in some flavor.
Well, yeah, and the stats can always be modified, but it's nice to have the flavor.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you got old Betsy here.
Well, I mean, what did Jane have? Vera?
Vera.
Yeah.
I mean, that's exactly what this is. You go over the top, and then, you'll have some drawbacks.
Because then as a GM, you can kidnap Vera.
Exactly.
And then your player character has to go after it. It's like, I could buy another one, but that ain't Vera.
You can kidnap Vera.
All right, well, before we get into Gauss weapons and whatnot, we're going to switch that dial over to some stories from the universe itself. Stay tuned and enjoy a little bit of a glimpse into the universe of Twilight Sector.
Kepler Reese is an agent with the Commercial Advisory Board in Kansas City, the capital of the Republic of the Plains. The CAB started as a government agency dedicated to aiding Republic of the Plains businesses with commercial intelligence. After General Nomadic's corporate forces raid in 2961, they also became the intelligence gathering agency of the ROP government. Agent Reese keeps an audio journal. The following is an entry in it.
Truth be told, I'm a fan of H&H Cinema. Back when everything was 2D, the really early ones were in black and white. They didn't even know how to make color images back then, but they did know how to use light. Yeah, they could use light. Technically, Ancient Age includes everything before we discovered the crystal ship on Europa in 2132. But I think everything before 3D in about 2010 should be its own category. Things get kind of muddy and hard to classify after that. They smoked all the time in those black and white ones. Then they quit for a while. I read it was health concerns. Ancient medicine really sucked. My point about old cinema was the way they imagined aliens. Aliens with two arms and two legs, that are tentacles and slime. They're real big on slime. Hell, half the time they had them interbreeding with humans. I guess you gotta cut them a little slack. 1,000 years ago, the best they could do was dress some guy up in a rubber suit and make him look like he had a fish head on or some such bullshit. What made me think of it was, I had a meeting today with some jerks from the Orion State Security. These asses pawn off names on us like Smith, Lee, or Rodriguez. Like we're supposed to believe that's their real names. One of them wasn't so bad. She didn't carry that arrogance like the rest of them did. She had an unusual first name, at least, Sybil. Still used Jones as a surname, but at least she smiled when she said it. Anyway, this Sybil got to talk with me about the possibility of alien life. She had a novel idea on it. What if alien life adapted to our forms? Her contention was an alien could code their DNA within a virus strand. If they're sophisticated enough, they might even be able to replicate specific individuals with their personal knowledge intact. It would make for a hell of an invasion scenario, especially if the hypothetical aliens had to cover vast amounts of time or space. Maybe if they were from outside the galaxy? Anyway, it made for an interesting conversation. you know, it's nice to meet a woman I can have a good conversation with, too.
Fordham Motors is proud to announce the new 2992 Catamount, where family transportation meets luxury. The all-new Catamount now comes with an all-leather interior, opaque windows, and a Boss 3000 entertainment system standard. Equipped with the new subatomic microcompensator grab plates, the Catamount features the best-in-class ride stability. Nicely equipped, the Catamount starts at only 23,500 credits. Hurry into your local Fordham dealer today to take advantage of our limited-time Discovery Day rebates. Fordham Motors, a better idea.
All right, so this big gun I brought, I think it's pretty cool. It only cost me a cool 50,000 credits here. It's big. What do you think of it?
What's its name?
Well, this one's a Guardian anti-material rifle.
Anti-material?
Anti-material!
So it just hurts material?
I'm gonna shoot you.
Do I get a head start?
No. Oh. You can go out on T-Space.
Or where'd you get that?
Anyway.
Fancy shooting iron.
Well, this one was Ellis and Ellis, but I don't have any money. I just stole it.
Oh, well. Five-finger discount. Or in your case, four-finger discount.
Well, yeah. Anyway, we're going to talk about Goss guns. I like Goss guns. And Goss rifles and all sorts of guns. Because the first one here in our nice little six guns is about guns. I know we talked about earlier that's about different stuff.
Mm-hmm.
This one's about guns. I think you guys started out right with guns. Goss weapons.
You need to start out at six guns with guns. It's just about guns.
And we started with Goss weapons.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what I liked is we started with a description of what a Goss weapon was because, I didn't know what a Goss weapon really was. I mean, I had heard descriptions of Goss-type weapons, you know, firing, like, needle projectiles. But that's why I like the six guns, just the descriptions. I mean, it even goes into how they have to be recharged, when they need to be recharged. It talks about certain recharging devices that they don't like to give to the soldiers because they'll plug other devices into it. So I see this soldier running around with your almost like a cell phone and like a MP3 player of the future.
The iPod,
yeah.
940.
Attached to their weapon, basically, and just...
I'm getting visions of essentially the Twilight Sector version of the Colonial Marines. They personalize their stuff.
Yes, exactly.
Your gun now has rails on it, you know, that light rims that spin.
But the nice thing about these Goss weapons is, well, they're kind of quiet. I mean, they make some noise.
Except when you put a speaker on the front that blares out, you know, Highway to Hell, which is your own prerogative when you have the option. Just going to say.
Well, when you pick up Goss weapons, it's going to break it to a couple of different types of Goss weapons. You have everything down to the Derringer, your one shot.
Mm-hmm.
It even has pitchers, which I just like. You know, so if you're in your little suit going to your party, you know, bow tie and everything, and you know some scum walks up to you, you could just unload. It actually functions like a shotgun almost. Needles in the face. I mean. Really. One shot, gone. One shot is all you really need.
All right.
Your gun does the talking for you.
Wild times in T-Space.
I know. The Iridium Guard Goss pistol. Kind of expensive, but 2,000 credits. It's a nice little, you know, secondary... Well, it could be a primary weapon, but I don't know. I would carry one around. I wouldn't use it as my primary weapon, though. Because, well, we already talked about what I'm going to use for my primary weapon.
Yes. Your primary weapon would also be used as a large walking stick.
Well, that's true. And a club once it ran out. But as a secondary weapon, the Guard Goss pistol, it was just nice. And they do talk about generally, you know, issue for military forces and stuff. And I can see that. Or police forces, too.
There's really only pansies use bullets anymore.
Well, that's true. I think they call them slug throwers.
Bah! Goss weapons, definitely the way to go.
Well, yeah. They also have a much better, you know, piercing through armor and such.
Mm-hmm.
the one thing when you read through this, it actually talks about how you can get the aiming is actually even better with the Goss weapons. It doubles, if you're using the Traveler, your rules, it actually doubles any of the aiming that you use. But again, you could make up any of the actual stats that you would want and just use the flavor. So that's really up to you. But it's there and it's nice. I'm really liking, too, how you have the companies in here that are actually producing them and also the breakdown. But my favorite one is the kit. There is a kit in here where basically it's your battle rifle system and you build your own gun.
That's custom ability.
Yes. You can just build it however you want. It's awesome. But we're going to go back to the Guardian anti-rifle, anti-material rifle. You really have to have a... You can't carry it around. You're not going to be able to carry it around.
Well, you could.
No, you're not. There's this little sidebar here, which I think is funny, called Training Day. And it talks about this soldier who has one of these rifles. And how they're actually talking about the how strong he has to be and basically how he has to... strap on one of the fusion guns and so on. It's just hilarious. And these are the little pieces in this book that I just love. I recommend just digging through this and just whether you care about like the stats, the weapons themselves are just awesome. The nice thing there's a chart at the back. So the book itself makes a lot of sense in the format. It gives you all the meat. It's all just kind of flows and then you have the stats at the back. Tech levels are all explained, if it's a pistol, if it's an assault weapon, so on. There is also a small section for, like, the stuff that goes with the gun, but this book is all about guns, Goss weapons.
It's fun. The only noise it really makes is the sonic boom from the bullet traveling. Yeah. The gun itself doesn't make a clicking or bang noise, it's the bullet going supersonic.
And there's no kick, it's just, and then they die.
Yeah, the anti-material rifle is actually kind of an homage. I don't know if you guys are familiar in the Geneva Convention during World War II, the 50 caliber machine gun was considered to be illegal under the Geneva Convention because it was just too devastating. So it became a running gag, I think, amongst the U.S. troops is you don't shoot the man, you shoot his uniform. It's an anti-material weapon.
Even when I was in, it was supposed to be used for destroying equipment.
It has its own ballistic computer.
Yeah, well, if something's traveling that fast, you need a steward. So.
You don't want to be on the receiving end of this stuff, that's for sure.
The pictures are really neat.
Yeah, actually, I was just looking at that. I know it's kind of weird to see it, but it's like the gun designs are very cool and very.
I like having the pictures in there because then you can like actually see the gun.
Well, I'm a very visual GM, so I mean, I'm like, this is what the gun looks like. Boom! And you know, if you have good simple images like that, you can pull them out and use them anywhere really. Any gun.
Well, right.
It's like this is the gun that this guy is toting. And,
yeah.
That way it's also, you know, it's like if people familiar with the game system or characters familiar with it, they go, oh, crap.
And really, you can make it as complex or as simple as you want. Because, I mean, it does talk about, you know, clip size, when you have to recharge them, and so on. And if you want to be very complex, you can say, okay, well, or you can just say, well, who cares?
You got everything a gun bunny could ever want in this thing. And you also have every flavor bit that your overdramatic method actor player could ever want as well.
Mm-hmm.
So you can be the rules lawyer and the Jane Vera guy all in one rolled together. So you can pick the parts you want, not pick the parts you want. Port it over to whatever system you like. There's plenty of explanation in there as far as, for example, whatever rule system you're using. Okay, you know that you get to double your ability, your aiming bonus, because the Goss weapon just doesn't have a whole lot of kick to it. It's an electromagnetically projected needle that does buku damage.
Didn't we make this gun illegal on most worlds for the commoner?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Well, the biggest one here says you have to basically get a special license to use it, but you can still use it for big game hunting if you can get the license.
Exactly.
What I really like, and I sort of agree with the battle rifle system, is that customability is a lot of fun. And so it's not just a book that has a listing of, you know, of several just one-off firearms. It's like you can actually take one of these or several of these and modify them, and so you're getting countless different combinations out of this one.
That's the beauty of Martin coming up with the idea of a gun that can go anywhere from being a pistol to a carbine to an assault rifle.
Yeah. It's that, well, it's versatility, and you know, on a battlefield, that's what you want. And well, as a player, that's what you want, because you want all those nifty toys.
You know, when you have to conceal a weapon to go to the dinner party, you know.
Exactly. It's like, oh, so I can't take the one that's 8 feet long. Okay. How about 6 feet?
But some of the details in here, you know, like necessary interfaces for heads-up display, how these things, even though the needles themselves might be able to be snuck through, you know, because it's just a needle, there's still so much metal in these that they can still trigger, you know, various sensors. You know, just there's enough detail in here to really make it just very interesting.
And for GMs to lay pretty little traps for their...
Exactly. So, and this was the part I was looking for, too. Selected accessories, because this was set aside from the guns. The Gauss weapons are the 6 pieces, but there's the selected accessories which go on them. The bipods, the tripods, the foregrip, the laser sights, the targeting scopes, and the firing sticks. I mean, those are extra pieces, but, you know, those are just... And then there's the credit prices, because one thing I hate, I'm really bad with prices, no matter what the game is. So I actually like having a price range, because then I can up or down, whatever.
Exactly.
But I like having it in my books.
And you have a drum magazine.
It's exactly, awesome. Yeah.
Which means you can have a Tommy gun-looking Gauss weapon, which is a win for everyone, I think.
Well, it helped that we had Martin Daugherty consult on this and write it, as he is on one of the famous channels now, consulting for one of the big shows now.
Oh, what's nice.
Oh, can we not say? Oh, never mind.
I don't know if we can. Triggers.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh. He told me he was coming over to Hollywood to do some stuff.
Nice.
So.
Genuine.
Well, and the thing about these pictures, I mean, they look like real guns.
Yeah.
I can't say that they don't.
I'm going to look
through it, and you don't say, oh, these are just...
You can expect some of these to eventually show up in the superhero game.
Yeah, I mean, they look like real weapons.
Because I'm a jackass.
But they really do, so which is nice. You can take something that is futuristic, but still looks realistic.
Yeah, that's something that would help your non-superhero level the playing field really fast.
And that kind of hits on the core.
So
of
I'll be converting
to
this to Mutants and Masterminds?
There you go, yeah.
Is that you can take a technology in our world and elevate it to a point you are a superhero. But then who's the next guy that's going to take another technology and elevate that to
and
their equivalent?
It, yeah.
And there's nothing to say that you were born a superhero. It's twisting or having the gumption to go, I'm going to take this technology and take advantage of it.
Right.
And if no one else is taking advantage of it, then you kind of have an edge until everyone else catches on.
Or if just in the concept or in the general concept of the universe, is you have one guy who has, say, the battle rifle system, and if he's the only guy that has it on this tiny moon, he's pretty much in charge. Yeah. I mean, you can have, you know, it's that whole old Wild West type of thing. It's like, it's this one guy who, you know, pretty much uses the planet as he sees fit, but he's got some firepower.
And then the guy shows up that has explosive needles.
Oh, well, that's an adventure right there.
Kind of like
time parachute.
I know.
Definitely just get Sean Connery to play one of the parts.
I know. On Io. Great.
Technology is like a parachute. You're going to wish you had it when you need it.
Exactly. And with that, we'll be back right after this, and we're going to get another little snippet of slice of life here from the universe, and then we're going to be back, and we're going to talk a little bit more lighthearted, getting away from this whole guns thing. So we'll be back.
Our story begins on the bridge of the Mistress of Orion in orbit over Terra Sol. She is commanded by Fleet Admiral Ramsey Thrace, and her first officer is the artificial intelligence Samuel Bass Meriwether Simpson Barnes.
All ships except the passenger liner Janet Nicole are docked, Admiral. Clamping protocol has begun on her, sir.
Have her made fast as soon as practicable, Ensign.
Aye, sir.
Ensign, please download all manifests and security clearances. Could you begin the pre-jump checklist? And have Commander Spear report to me in my briefing room, please.
Aye, sir.
Admiral, a bulk freighter, Opax Gluchi, has entered our exclusion zone.
Commander Barnes, could I please have a little more detail from my first officer?
Sorry, sir. I was trying to raise the Opax Gluchi. There has been no reply. At its present speed and trajectory, the Gluchi will impact the Mistress in 1 minute and 32 seconds.
What? How big is she? How the hell did she get this close? Helmsman, evasive maneuvers. Come hard about.
She's bigger than the ONS Kansas, sir. The ship that brought down
the Mayday, I know. How'd she get this close? Gunnery Control, bring all weapons to bear on the Kaluchi's drives. Mark and lock.
Sir, if we move now, we'll collide with the Janet Nicole.
Traffic over Terra is crowded, sir.
Navigator, do we have a jump solution? Traffic is not an acceptable explanation for our predicament, Commander Barnes.
Yes, sir, the solution is plotted, but we're still in Terra's gravity well, sir.
Ensign, prepare to fire all port bays. Blow that Archinar bastard out of the sky.
Sir, the damage we would suffer from a collision with the Janet Nicole would not be catastrophic.
Commander, it would be catastrophic to the Janet Nicole. Do you know how many people are on the Janet Nicole? Am I supposed to let them die? I'll be damned.
According to the manifest, 638 sentients, sir.
What?
638 sentients are on the Janet Nicole. That includes one AI and 22 uplifted canines, Admiral.
You've got to be kidding me. Commander, I'll be damned if I'm going to let them die or us be stranded here. The Pax Combine is nothing more than an Archinar front company, and the Archinar aren't going to strand the Mistress here for whatever reason they might have.
Sir, repairs would take only 9 days, 16 hours, and 47 minutes approximately. Cost to the Confederation would be less than 6 billion credits.
Admiral, port weapons are not online yet. At this range, I'm not sure even the spinal mount would be enough to fully deflect the Kaluche, sir. It might just turn her into a lot of shrapnel.
Ensign, provisionally secure the Janet Nicole. Make sure she stays tethered in our jump envelope. Any other options? Anybody? Commander Barnes, you've been full of good information today. What's your advice?
The Janet Nicole is provisionally tethered, sir.
Nothing? Okay, Navigator. Initiate jump. Now, now, now.
Aye, sir. Jumping. Now, now, now.
Commander Barnes, we are not done. I will have an explanation how this could possibly have happened to us. Ensign, send word back to Terrasol. I want the Kaluchi's captain in chains.
And we have returned back into this wonderful space squid infested T-space zone. I wonder if we can make one of those a pet.
I have a talking turtle.
You have that a talking
flies.
Turtle? Yes.
I downloaded an AI into it.
Mm-hmm.
It speaks 30,000 languages.
Most of which aren't used even today.
I don't care.
And it knows Kung
it's
Fu.
It's smarter than all of us.
Mm-hmm.
It did cost 30.
I did that to a cat once. I don't know what happened to that cat. It left.
Probably didn't need you anymore. It defeated itself.
That's true.
It still has to use a box.
Well, you know, yes. We talk about today where people could clone their pets if they had enough money. And that's where this kind of came from, is like, well, we got to fast forward several generations, and how would that progress to having a pet? Because I know I had a cat, favorite animal I've ever had.
Goss weapons aside, T-space aside, all this cool, you know, I'm in space stuff, but you know what? Sometimes you want to have a dog.
You want your dog.
You want a gerbil.
A boy and his dog. Is
exactly.
There any better story?
A boy
story?
And his dog. And in a Slice of Life article you guys did, he really sort of took that and really turned it into that space opera thing where you have, you know, it's like, it, but it's not, you did it in a way that's not cheesy. Because a lot of times, like, well, it could be. But what I'm saying is, it's not.
How many space captains? There's at least one who's got that little talking poodle.
Yeah. Well, you know what? Where it really came out of was we were sitting around and brainstorming like we often do. We were talking about biocons. Okay, biocons basically are deservant clones. Couldn't you do that with a dog?
Yeah, animals should be easier.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, much easier to grow. Then to my mind, this thing that kept coming was a certain starlet in our own time who runs around with a dog in her purse. And it's just pink purse dog that's smarter than its owner. For some reason, that just gave me the giggles. And so then I started writing pets in the 30th century.
Especially if you could click something and it opens its mouth and starts just playing music out of its mouth and or other side.
Plug it into your gospel.
Yeah. Can you imagine, I mean, you look at today, you know, in the pet trades and you see certain exotic animals, what was it, sugar babies or whatever they call those little...
Beanie babies?
No.
No, the little, I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, they're
little...
a rare exotic thing.
Like dwarf cats and stuff like that.
Yes, the latest thing in the market. Well, what if you can sit there and mix and match and design hundreds of these things? So you're going to have trends going through popular culture constantly.
Think of it like you're buying a car right now, right? You go to your website, you can design that car. You can, you know, go to the Aston Martin website and sit there and design a car. You can pick the trim, the color, all that. Yep. Think of that, but for pets.
Yep.
Well, and people, once they reached a certain level of civilization, have always wanted pets.
See, and instead of having pet stores and rescues, you have what is the equivalent of like a car dealership for pets. So you go there and there's the pet salesman.
Exactly.
It's like, hey, you know what I see you walking away with today? This salamander.
And the name of that store is Best Pets Ever.
As a matter of fact, we're thinking about using that as in the as a company.
But that could get into the fantastic and fantasy critter too. I mean, because with technology and genetics and geez, I mean, just anything. You could have really anything.
Well, I remember back to my early D&D days when I first got started, and what was the pseudo-dragon? The little pseudo-dragon. Oh, I just love those. That's what everybody wanted as their familiar. You can build your own.
Yeah, you could build your own.
Get a little lizard, put some wings on him, and you give him the ability to breathe fire.
Yeah. Entirely doable in the 30th century.
Exactly.
And then, you know, if you want to go robotic, there's enough robotic technology or cybernetic.
That's right. You can make it biological or you can make it robotic. And actually, one of the things we've tried to build into the setting is biological is for much cooler. It's much more status-driven. They're more expensive, blah, blah, blah.
Well, yeah. You don't see the moving parts.
Yeah, exactly. If you want to slum it, you get a robot, you know, with a faux fur over it so you really can't see it. We were talking about this at dinner here. Was so that you got the guy who got the robot because he can't keep up with the Joneses, you know, he can't afford the biocon version of it. So he actually, they probably make a adaption so that the thing actually looks like it's pooping on the front yard. It's not really a biocon, it's a robot, but everyone thinks it's a biocon, so he's got the status he wanted.
That would be advertising one of those as seen on TV.
Things. Exactly.
with one of those indoor grass mats.
Now the deluxe poop attachment, you know. Yes. And Chris, there are actually some useful functions you can use for some of these as well.
Yeah, we thought, well, if they're going to be pets, they'll probably also have jobs like your police dog, canine robot R1, you know, would most likely want to be a robot so it, you know, doesn't die. Although, like you were mentioning, Mike, the prestige and fluffiness of a real animal, right? You can't really pet a robot.
Well, you can make it so you can pet it.
You have those military installations with you know, guard dogs, essentially. But the military is not going to be getting the fancy one. They're not going to care. It's like, okay, this is, yes, it's box-like, but it can rip your arm off. And it doesn't sleep.
For civilians, though, something as simple as the companion who, when a person is blue, when they're down, it doesn't just sit there and purr. It also talks to them. You had a bad day. Please tell me your problem. I noticed that you're having issues with your job. Well, please tell me.
Flows into like EdSoft, education software,
right.
Where you give your kid a pet.
Right.
It's also its tutor.
Right. Well, and actually, this brings up something from our first episode. It was the cybernetics book. And towards the end of the cybernetics book...
I just love synergy.
There was something very, very neat, which I think would be great for pets, too. And it is, if I can find it very quickly, it's that very strange, beyond cyborgs, that crazy, crazy...
Surgeware?
Yes!
Ah, yeah, you're right!
Mix pets with surgeware!
He's hit upon something there that I hadn't even thought of.
We gotta stop coming to these things.
I mean, think about surgeware and pets. One, it'd be simpler.
Yeah.
Because it's an animal. It's smaller. And not, I mean, rich people, spies, governments and stuff, they could send in a super intelligent whatever rat with surgeware.
Or literally the fly on the wall.
Or the fly on the wall with surgeware.
Yeah, the embassy.
Think about that.
That damn stray cat's in the courtyard again.
Yeah, I mean, with surgeware...
It's effectively the military drones of the day.
Not to mention, with these pets, you actually open up, and I know in...
Pricey,
but... And we've talked about playing...
Well, not even military, corporate espionage.
Corporate espionage.
Oh, yeah.
And we've talked about
companies are a lot more devious and don't have to follow those federal regulations.
We've talked about playing characters that were uplifted, basically, and intelligent animals. But you could actually play a pet very easily. That was one of these types.
It's the big problem with being uplifted is now you have rights.
Right.
So if you're just a pet.
What we're
calling pre-uplifted pets.
Pre-uplifted pets. But then you could...
They're fairly intelligent, but can do a lot. They can do a lot.
But
you're right.
In a game, that would be very interesting. You're someone's pet. And if you're a surgeware pet, that'd be even crazier.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, you always have that player who wants to be everywhere at once.
Yeah.
Oh, you know, same as a wizard is familiar, you know.
Exactly.
It's the science fiction version of a familiar for
you. Yeah. I mean, it opens up a lot of interesting things.
Oh, definitely.
So, you know, that little fuzzy cat could grow wings just and fly off. Or it has rockets on it and just takes off. You know, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But I was like, wait, cybernetics. What was that thing called? Surgery.
All right. Well, that's pets in the 30th century, where we man's best friends can be
they can use goss weapons and fly your ship.
Occasionally, they can be goss weapons.
That's true. They could
totally.
Fluffy the Iridium Guard and the Material Rifle.
He only needs a couple of shots.
Exactly.
You can really have
shoot the uniform. Shoot the uniform.
Be real devious with this sort of thing, you know.
Well, think about an AI of a ship, and it could, yes, it can see mostly everywhere, but if it needed to send something somewhere, it could just have little pet rats.
Oh, yeah.
I mean,
instead of little drones, has little rats or spiders. Or,
and what's creepier for a person?
Or if it's a luxury liner or something, you choose what your user interface is going to be.
Rats,
there's a parrot in your room.
Yeah.
That's actually the interface of the computer. Or there's a cat, or there's a dog,
and
or there's
at
a
the same time,
gerbil, or whatever you want.
They're like, okay, well, we need to check this out, but we don't want to send a crew member because that would cause issues. So they send a cat.
Mm-hmm.
The cat goes and checks it out, finds out there's a hole. The cat goes back.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Who needs those astromech droids?
Well, they are. They're cats.
They are. It's the computer's pet.
Mm-hmm. Most definitely. I mean, with the you could have a lot of fun with that and go entirely into that comfort level, entirely into the espionage crazy level with it. You know,
I do like the. You pick whatever. I think that's
on big luxury liners that have
like when you
space
talk to the computer. I think that's great instead of just a screen or something.
Well, you
like
know, I'm traveling first class, and you know I don't want to have to stare at your everyday you know, monitor.
Exactly.
I have a...
I picked a giant pink gorilla.
Exactly. If I need to see something, it projects a hologram out in front of it.
Exactly. Done.
Which kind of brings up an off-topic topic.
Oh, well.
Pink gorilla?
If you were born paraplegic or born with severe debilitating disease, and they didn't catch it in the genetic probing before preconditioning. Yeah. You would want to become a ghost as soon as possible.
Right.
And then be downloaded to a discernible clone.
So the folks at home will understand, ghost is basically, it's the destructive downloading of your brain to become a digitalized entity like an artificial intelligence, so that you live in the machine. But as a ghost, you could then download yourself into all kinds of, well, let's say somebody, because I think it's less likely they'd be born in the 30th century with that, but let's say a war veteran.
Or as you get older, you get starting to get Alzheimer's, or you know your predisposition for Alzheimer's, mm-hmm. so maybe 5 years even before the age that you might be getting it, I do not want to lose my intellect. Right. And you go and decide to have it done. Right. And the easy way, we were even getting confused between a ghost and a dupe, which one we were talking about. Mm-hmm. It's easy to remember, a ghost is a dead person. It's and true. So, but
there's no body form on the ground anymore. A dupe, mm-hmm. you could actually have, well, the living person should still be around.
As in a duplicate, you've got the real person running around, and you've got running around in the internet.
As a ghost, you're much more high fidelity copy of the person. Mm-hmm. Now, for rules, which will be coming out in Mutants and AIs, if you're a dupe, then you're going to probably have to step back. You're going to drop back some of your, let's say you're a two with a gauze rifle. You might be a gauze rifle one instead, because it's a copy. It's not this high fidelity as a ghost would be, which it involves the destructive peeling away of every layer of your brain to be copied into a digital version.
But if you were from a backwater world, you could still be born that way, though.
That's true. Right. You're right.
And then if you got off that world and you learned, hey, I could do this.
Because what got me thinking about it was, seeing eye dog.
Right.
Pets, right? Yep. That would be something that you could have.
Yeah,
but then it's like, well, why would somebody decide to remain blind or decide to remain debilitated when they could become a ghost? Although that's a pretty big decision to say, all right, religiously, right, I can destroy my body. Does my soul reside in my body
or
my intellect?
Yeah.
If you don't care, just do it.
That's true.
But if you said that, you might be pissing off a lot of AI.
That's true. Then you have to think about, what can I afford? Can I afford a human body, or can I afford a goat?
Goats are cheaper. I mean,
because at that point you have, or you can run around as a ghost, or whatever. But, then you download your body and you're like, we had this goat, so now you're a goat.
We were out of bodies in your size.
Kind of like when you used to get reincarnated in another game.
Right, exactly. I don't know what you're
talking about. Aw, I'm a squirrel.
You walk into the facility. Well, you don't walk because you're a ghost. You go into the facility and you say, I have 10,000 credits. What can I buy? And when you come back...
The frog, the goat. Your choice.
How big do you want to be? As big as I can.
We have a slightly used donkey.
Okay.
You go in, it's like, my body needs to be fixed up. I'll just, take the loner out today.
We threw in a voice box.
Exactly. And you sound just like Eddie Murphy now.
But the good thing is, you work in Tijuana.
Oh, that's bad.
But there may be some people who chose...
to work in Tijuana?
Oh, I was going to say pets. But you could even think about, since there are... I mean, connecting it to pets, you could have people then, now with ghosts and pets, create some sort of fantastic creature and then download their mind into this dragon body. Now, normal people would think they were freaks.
But you got to realize, things are going to get weird in the 30th century. So there's going to be people out there like that. There's going to be people that choose very early to become ghosts because they think it's, I'm going to skip the process. I could die in between here and now. I want to become immortal
and
now.
If they were rich enough, who cares?
Right.
They could just live on an asteroid or something and whatever.
And before we get out of here on the as far as the slice of life stuff, I want to give a little plug out to our friends at Freelance Traveler. You can go to Freelance Traveler and their website, which I think it's freelancetraveler.com, if I'm not mistaken. And they have all kinds of great stuff out there, but they have the entire list of the slice of life articles that we've written to date, and we continue to write them, and there will be more as time goes on for you to peruse.
Alrighty, well, that is it for the Twilight Sector podcast for today. We will see you guys next time, and until then, we're going to drift around in T-space and hopefully not run into any space squid.
I see another whale. See? I'm going to get the harpoon.
We have a harpoon?
Oh, we do.
Ahab. Call me Ishmael.
Was noontide of summer and midtime of night, and stars in their orbits shone pale through the light of the brighter cold moon, mid planets her slaves, herself in the heavens, her beam on the waves. There passes a shroud, a fleecy cloud, and I turned away to thee, proud evening star. I bet Poe never wrote a poem about your casino. Come see what everyone's talking about, the Evening Star Resort and Casino. It's only 36 hours away for a system's worth of fun. Packages start at only 1,299 credits for a six-night stay. Turn away to the Evening Star.
Kodiak Jones is an itinerant traveler and author, perhaps most famous for his series, Jonesy Travels the Galaxy on a Half-Credit a Light Year. He is currently exploring Terra Sol with his companion and friend, Brother Jeremiah. Brother Jeremiah is an uplifted chimpanzee and an adherent of the Shinzu path to enlightenment. The following are excerpts from Brother Jeremiah's audio notes for his book, Twilight Conversations, with his co-author Kodiak Jones.
Blues are playing their arch-rivals, the Washington Athletic Club, also known as the Retrievers. This is a road grudge match. From our seats here, it feels like the excitement comes as much from the crowd as it does from the zero-G field. Bluskashi is probably the most popular sport here on Terra Sol. It's a mixture of motorsports, medieval jousting, and pure physical violence, and the crowd eats it up. Kodiak Jones and I are privileged to be taking this match in with Blues great Balor Tupac.
That's hard to imagine. I can barely hear myself think out here. Bluskashi is the most popular sport in the Twilight Zone. The season lasts for 4 months here in Terra Sol. Then there's another season over there. In between those, there are cup tournaments and exhibitions. It's a busy life being a player. Your body takes a hell of a beat. I hear net broadcast rights are over 1 million credits a team. Closer to the 2, actually. What are salaries like?
Well, some of the biggest stars make north of $20 million a year.
With all that money on the line, I can't believe how much the players are going after each other out there.
Yeah, probably a little more than normal. These two teams are rivals, and even though most of the players probably don't have any idea why, they pick up on it from the fans. You can't go anywhere during the week leading up to the game without some fans coming up to you and saying, "Beat the doggies!"
Is there a story behind the rivalry?
Oh yeah. Washington is the capital of the EFR, and Kansas City, of course, is the capital of the ROP. Those two don't like each other. It goes back to a border war or something. Anyway, it's a real deal, not some made-up rivalry.
Doggies?
Yeah, one of the nicknames for the Washington team is the Retrievers.
Don't the uplifted dogs take offense to that?
I suppose some might, but that's their problem.
Beat the doggies!
Baylor! 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 Baylor!
Well, that really got them going. Just some red meat for the faithful. On another subject, when I talked to your agent to set up this meeting, he told me that you'd stop here at the gap. 217 years is a pretty good run, don't you think? Why did you choose to stop? What? Maybe we should meet for breakfast tomorrow. We can talk more then, and I might be able to hear you. Sounds good. Meeting this morning. Baylor Tupac died last night. The roar of the crowd is still in his ears. It comes to all of us, but I think Brother Jeremiah is right when he says, Baylor died well. Our hosts for the Twilight Sector podcast are Ethan Parker and Jeremy Putnam. The Twilight Sector theme, On the Edge, was written by Ryan Leip with lyrics by Michael Cross. It is performed by Ryan Leip on guitar, Samantha Brunker on cello, and Catherine Cross on vocals. In-game content produced by Michael Cross. Additional voice work by Lori Cross and Catherine Cross. Kepler Reese performed by Aaron Hoover. Visit his website at projectuncool.com. This podcast uses the following music, whose titles are Chipper, Lone Harvest, Motivator, Not As It Seems, Open Those Bright Eyes, The Rule, all by Kevin MacLeod and Competech.com. The Twilight Sector podcast is a production of Terrasol Games, and all rights are reserved.
This book was purchased from DriveThruRPG.com on order number